Lecture 16, The Origins of Witchcraft.
Welcome to Lecture 16. In Lecture 15, the previous lecture, we look in some detail at astrology, alchemy, magic, and in greater detail to Hermeticism. All those, movements or beliefs or forms of knowledge, because we have to think of them as forms of knowledge, were really part of elite culture, part of a high culture discourse, which was shared by only a few people who had, in fact, relationships with those in power. Witchcraft, which we begin to discuss today, and which will occupy us for the last 9 concluding lectures, is a very different kind of phenomena. Witchcraft is a very different kind of phenomenon. Witchcraft is essentially a combination of both learned discourse and popular one. And the way in which witchcraft, as understood, explained, articulated by those in power, and as suffered, in a sense, experienced by those below, is one of the topics of this entire section of lectures. That is to say, the way in which culture flows from top down, the way in which the beliefs or ideas are articulated by those on top are imposed on those at the bottom. I also want, before I even begin this lecture, to make a distinction here between witchcraft and the witch craze. The lectures are really about the witch craze. And though I will go back and explain in luxury of detail what the witch craze is or was, I want to begin by a kind of very brief reference to it, so that we keep this in a context. What is the witch craze? In Europe, in the Europe of the Renaissance, in the Europe of the Scientific Revolution, between, let's say, the late 15th century, 1480s, and 1660s, in that period of time, most Europeans, whether they are part of that learned elite or whether they are members of the lower classes, most Europeans believed that there were people in the midst, mostly women, mostly all women, who consorted with the devil. And because they believed this, or because they were forced to believe this, they went out and persecuted these people. And in between the 1480s and the 1660s, between 80 and 100,000 people, most of them elderly women, were executed either by fire, by burning at the stake, or by hanging from the necks in England, where execution by fire was not allowed. This is an extraordinary phenomenon. And it is, in many respects, the underbelly, the counterpart of the other Europe, the Europe of great monuments, the Europe of the culture of the Baroque, the Europe of the rational state, the Europe of the Scientific Revolution. How did this happen? How did this come about? What prompted these kinds of beliefs? They did not exist in the Middle Ages. No one believed this in the Middle Ages, and they burst, emerge out of the blue. In succeeding lectures, I am going to provide both a context and an attempt at an explanation for this phenomenon. But in this lecture, what I want to do is examine witchcraft as opposed to the witch craze within the European tradition. And I want to begin by, in a sense, borrowing a definition from one of the most learned men of the 16th century, a lawyer, a philosopher, a historian, a man named Jean Bodin. And he writes a very clear and central definition: a sorcerer or a witch is one who, by commerce with the devil, has a full intention of attaining his own ends or her own ends. That is to say, that the very essence of witchcraft is consorting with the devil, is in a sense creating ties with the devil in order to obtain certain specific ends. One of the things, of course, is that in Europe, from the late 15th century onwards, scholars, kings, sought to define the nature of witchcraft. The number of treatises written on this topic are innumerable. People who explained, all of them following the lead of a great book entitled, a great book only in its influence, in its nefarious influence, entitled The Malleus Maleficarum, which I will examine in detail in a later lecture. But from then onwards, from the late 15th century onwards, Europeans, the learned elite, sought to define what witchcraft was. People like James I, the King of England, spent a great deal of his energies writing treatises on whether witches, or whether the devil could essentially propagate or not, whether incubus and succubus, or incubus, could essentially have issue or not, and where did they get the semen, and so on. Extraordinary, bizarre things which occupy the mind of Europe. Probably more books were written about witchcraft in this 150 years than they were written about astronomy or science. The point, of course, is that by the 16th century, witchcraft has now acquired a characteristic, a personality in Europe. And it is this definition of witchcraft which comes to predominate in the 16th century that lies and underpins, lies underneath and underpins the whole persecution of witches, the whole creation of a witch craze, the construction of attacks against witches. This is remarkable because in an earlier period, the Catholic Church has dismissed these charges and these ideas as preposterous. This is not to say that some people were not accused of witchcraft or necromancy, which is essentially the way in which was described in an earlier period. That is to say, these cases occurred from time to time, and some people in the 13th and 14th century are in fact burned, accused of necromancy or witchcraft or consorting with the devil. And that there are examples of this and references of this in the learned literature of an earlier period still. But the Church as a whole did not accept the idea that there was a vast conspiracy, that the kind of things that we find in the 16th and 17th century were unacceptable, and that the idea that witches did have this power to consort with the devil, and that they were organized in the ways in which people thought they were organized in the later period, we are dismissed as sheer nonsense, something that really they have nothing to do with the truth, because, of course, the question at hand here is the power of God. And God, in his incredible mercy, will never allow the devil to hold this power. So again, the question which I hope to answer in the next two or three lectures is why in the late 15th century and in the 16th century, this idea of the earlier Church, of earlier Europeans, is overthrown and replaced by something else. What kind of social and economic and intellectual elements or factors indeed influence the way in which people thought of witches and of witchcraft? By, in a sense, drawing the boundaries of witchcraft so clearly, by defining what it was, by identifying witches, what you create is a discourse of witchcraft in the 16th and 17th century, which is going to lead inexorably to the massacre, probably the first important attempt of genocide. Let me remind you, for example, that the Spanish Inquisition, which is usually categorized as one of the greatest and most heinous crimes of humanity, probably did not kill more than 5,000 people between 1480 and the early part of the 19th century in Spain. Whereas when we look at the witch craze and the trials of witches carried out throughout most of Europe, although not in all of Europe, we're really talking about massive numbers for the early modern period when you do not have the technology which we have today in the 20th century to perpetrate huge mass killings. I think what we want to do here is to, in a sense, go back to the very beginnings of witchcraft in the Western tradition, and to compare and to place it within a kind of worldwide sense of witchcraft. Historians have argued that witches are found in all cultures, that you can find witches in pre-Columbian Mexico, or that you can find witches in ancient China or medieval China, that there are references to witches in the Bible. Saul goes to visit the witch of Endor in the cave of the witch, and to obtain something from the witch, that it is something that it is universal. I think I will be a bit reluctant to apply this universality as to the belief in witchcraft or as to the presence of witches in other cultures. It is very clear that concepts of evil and good are culturally specific. And I will talk about that when I discuss the notion of the devil and Satan later on. And therefore, when we identify or define something as witchcraft in another culture, what we are probably doing is essentially imposing our own concept of culture on other cultures. That is to say, we are judging phenomena that we see in other cultures and essentially defining it in our own terms. What I'm trying to say here very briefly, and I follow Clifford Geertz on this, is that it's not always proper or correct to, in a sense, attribute the behavior of other cultures and denote them or define them as witchcraft, because as witchcraft is defined in the Western tradition, it's all about the relationship between the witch, that is to say, male or female, with the devil. And the concept of evil is very different in other cultures. So we could call witchcraft certain things that we find in the New World or in Africa or in Asia, but the people themselves in these cultures may not, in fact, define them as witchcraft. So we have to be careful about claims to the universality of witchcraft, even though we know that witchcraft is, to this very day, practice, or at least what we call witchcraft ourselves, Westerners, call witchcraft is practice in many parts of the world. What are the origins of witchcraft, magic, and so on? I think that historically we can say, and there is a great deal of work that has been done on the history of religions in the last few years, historically we can say that the first religions of mankind, the very early religions, the first that we can somewhat testify to, were vegetation religions, were fertility cults. In fact, many of the forms of vegetation religions and fertility cults remain alive in European culture, and I will go back to that in a few minutes. So that essentially the first religions of mankind were not religion at all, and that there is an important boundary between what we might call the magical concept of the world and the religious concept of the world. Religion and magic are always intertwined. They are, in a sense, intertwined to this very day. But there is, however, a great deal of difference in the way in which you conceive magic, or what we might call witchcraft, and you conceive religion. Magic is a way in which early men and women, I don't want to use the term primitive man because it is unjust, in which men in earlier civilizations, in the very early prehistorical civilizations, tries to contend and dominate the world. How do you, in a sense, control nature? The terror of history, about which I talk on the first lecture in which we met, that terror of history about which I will discuss at the very end of the series of lectures, is also was present for prehistorical man, the man before the birth of religion, before the birth of history. That is to say, how do you deal with nature? How can you be assured that the sun, which in fact provides heat and makes your plants grow, will come out tomorrow? There is a series of things in nature that have to be placated, controlled, and therefore you engage in a series of ceremonies and incantations and so on, which give you a sense of power over nature. is the realization that these things do not work that lead to religion, which is, of course, the acceptance of the fact that you cannot control the world, that you have to surrender to the terror of history, and that you have to depend essentially on a deity or on a collection of deities, depending on which, in a sense, which society you live in. This is a very important transition, because there will be historians who will trace the beginning of witchcraft in Europe, in the Western tradition, to many of these practices which remain alive, especially among rural populations, so that the awareness of the world as being impossible to control, the awareness that we really have no power over nature, that the sun will come up every morning or will not come up, but that there's nothing we can do to control that, is also the realization that then we enter into a very different relationship with the sacred, with the world and the sacred. So religion grows out of that. And I want to point out that to this very day, and I want to point out this, and want to repeat this and reiterate this through all the lectures that follow, that religion to this very day, that people to this very day who might even be not religious, very rational, still engage in many respects in acts of magic, or acts which we might call almost acts of witchcraft. It could be something very simple. It could be something as simple as how you get out of bed every morning, or what hangs around your neck, or what things you touch at your door when you leave your home, or the kind of practices and incantation, or your favorite shirt that you wear for a specific date or for job interviews, or the pen with which you always got good grades in your exams, that we attribute to the physical world some elements of magic which essentially gives us control over the world, and that even in the most lofty religions today, there are elements which harken back to the very beginnings of history, and which can only be described, as it were, as attempts to control the world, to control nature around us. I can go on describing these things because they are indeed a very important parcel, the things we hold in our hands because we think they bring us luck, the kinds of practices which are really bring us very close to that prehistoric man yearning desperately to escape from the terrors around him. This notion that witchcraft is really the result of having consort with the devil and so on is grounded on the very popular belief, a belief widespread throughout the world and certainly present in our Western culture, that magic is real, that you can gain some powers by certain formulas, that if one doesn't, it's because one has not repeated the formula correctly, that there is also in the world a dichotomy between good and evil, at least in our culture, in Western culture, and I will talk about that in greater detail in a lecture later on, but that there is a duality to the world, that duality begins with our own awareness of the universe, sun and moon. Julio Caro Baroja, a great anthropologist, in a great book entitled The World of the Witches, the first part of which is essentially a kind of anthropological examination of the roots of witchcraft, of the roots of the world of witches. This dichotomy between day and night, between sun and moon, which creates in our culture, in Western culture, the kind of dualistic opposites, the opposites, good on the one side, identified in our culture with light, evil, identified in our culture with darkness, the fears of the night, which are still, in many respects, have a grip on us, and which, of course, had a tremendous grip on ancient man, on prehistoric man. The fear when the sun dies, when the sun sets, and darkness is all around you, and there is no way to light the darkness as we do today, which is reflected to this very day in the uncomfortable sense of many people of being in the dark, of walking in the dark, of fearing darkness, because the darkness is identified with evil things, with things that will eventually destroy you. I always remember as a child that walking home in the middle of the dark, everybody begins to sing or whistle because it was a way in which you try to protect yourself from all the things around you that you did not see. So that this sharp dichotomy, this sharp division between good and evil is, and I will add this again and again because I will go back to this in a later lecture, it's a very Western phenomenon, not present in other cultures, but one which is deeply embedded in the way in which we conceive of things. So how do historians look at witchcraft, and specifically how historians look at the witch craze? I cannot tell you the amount of books that have been written on this topic. It is a topic that has a specific and unique attraction for historians in the last 50 years. And there are all kinds of opinions about this, and they range, and there is no unanimity on this, on what witchcraft is, or what prompted or what led to the witch craze. Some historians argue that the whole witch craze, or the whole witchcraft, is utter nonsense, that it was in many respects constructed by those in power, and I will talk about that, as a way essentially of either creating escape for people, escaping from history by persecuting others, a kind of scapegoating that served very specific political purposes, and that it was nonsense, and that we cannot trust at all the evidence, the historical evidence we have, especially for the 16th and 17th century, because this is evidence that is obtained through coercion, and that it is an evidence that is planted in the mind of these poor people who are brought to trial by the inquisitors or by those questioning them, who in essentially lead the accused eventually to the admission of charges which are utterly preposterous and which have no foundation whatsoever. So that this is a very important fact, and we must realize that in discussing witchcraft in the next 8 lectures, we are really drawing from sources which are always, with no exception, hostile to witchcraft and to the witches. That we do not hear, ever hear, the voice of the witch. We hear it only mediated by the questioner. We have no document that tells us what they really thought, the people who are accused, the people who are burned, the people who are hanged from their necks. That we have only, essentially, the information and the sources that are given to us by those in power. And therefore, this historiographical approach, which looks at the victims, and which look at the victim, and which look at witchcraft from the bottom up, that is to say, the people who have been victimized by this kind of discourse of witchcraft, is a kind of historiographical tendencies that dominated the history of witchcraft, with the exception of some rather, shall we say, preposterous writing that takes the whole thing seriously and believes that, yes, there was essentially witchcraft. It's a kind of historiographical tendency that has dominated the field until very recently. However, there is another point of view. A historian named Margaret Murray wrote a book in the early 1920s. This is also related to the great work, which I will go back at the end of this course, the great work by James Frazer, The Golden Bough, which examines folklore and peasant and folklore beliefs in Europe and throughout the world. Margaret Murray argues that the witchcraft was a reality, that the inquisitors were answering, essentially, were responding to a reality, and that this reality was the survival in Europe of agrarian cults. That is to say, that many of the very primitive forms of relations that existed in Europe in prehistoric times had survived, and that they manifested themselves in the 16th century, and I will discuss this later on in much greater detail, and that this is what the inquisitors found, that these practices were in fact taking place in Europe, and that there were people who were practicing these kinds of ceremonies and beliefs and so on, and until they are ferreted out by the inquisitors. I don't have to tell you that Margaret Murray was, in fact, laughed out of academia. Her ideas were dismissed altogether as being preposterous, and in fact, no one took them very seriously until around 30 years ago or so, went a great Italian historian, perhaps one of the foremost historians in the last 50 years, a man named Carlo Ginzburg, wrote a book entitled Ibn Andanti, which have been translated into English as The Night Battles. He went on to write many other important books dealing more or less with the same theme. Of what Carlo Ginzburg argued in the Ibn Andanti, and I will revisit this book in a later lecture in greater detail, was that, in fact, in the area of the Friuli, you could identify a group of people who call themselves the good walkers, the night walkers, who, in fact, had a system of beliefs which harkened back to an agrarian cult that you have preserved in Europe through 1,500 years of Christianity and years of pagan religions. This cult had remained alive in a part of Italy, a kind of isolated part of Italy called the Friuli in the Veneto, and that, in fact, what inquisitors identified as witchcraft was essentially a practice that went harking back and had nothing to do with the devil or anything like that. There have been criticisms of this. Norman Cohn, who wrote The Pursuit of the Millennium, one of the greatest scholars of millenarian history, accused Ginzburg of resurrecting Margaret Murray's ideas and, in fact, dismissing them, not the story which Carlo Ginzburg tells in such wonderful detail, but the idea that there was an agrarian cult that have survived. I myself agree with Carlo Ginzburg on this matter, and I think I agree also with the kind of archaeological work that he does. I mean, not archaeology in the sense of looking for ruins, but that he carries out an archaeology of beliefs in which he traces back many of these practices to other parts of Europe, to other parts in Asia, and so on. And he connects all system of very kind of esoteric beliefs that culminate in this kind of beliefs. So, in a sense, what you have here is another interpretation, and we will revisit this and so on. The point, of course, is that from the 13th century on, we see a slow shift in the way in which Christianity begins to define witchcraft. From Thomas Aquinas onwards, we have a greater and greater preoccupation. As I will argue later on, this greater preoccupation was a response to changing economic and social and political conditions. But what you have here is by the 13th century, by the 14th century, you have a greater preoccupation with witchcraft and an attempt within Christianity itself, within a learned elite, to begin to define what witchcraft was, who was a witch, and how do we deal with witches. This, of course, led in the late 15th century to a complete new definition and preoccupation with witches. Beginning in the middle of the 15th century onward, a series of economic and social factors, changing conditions in the European countryside, the penetration of the church into areas which have not been fully Christianized until then, led those tribunes of the new culture of the plains, and I will talk about this, Dominicans and Franciscans, the mendicant orders, to come into contact with worlds that have not yet been fully brought into Christianity. And the result of that, emerging out of this cauldron of new definitions, new social and economic conditions, was essentially the witch craze. And because Europe defined itself anew at the end of the 15th century, close to 100,000 people, as I said to you, mostly women, pay with their lives. Thank you.